Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm your host, Rita Peters, and I've got a great guest for you today. Now, unfortunately, my regular co-host, Mark Meckler, will not be able to join us for the program. He's going to be really sorry to miss today's guest, but he is on location in Denver, Colorado for a rally at the Capitol promoting the Convention of States project. So I'm going solo today with a wonderful guest. If you're listening right now and you just heard me say Convention of States Project and you want to know what that is, go to conventionofstates.com and learn more. But let's get on to today. Now, if you listened to last week's program, you heard us talking about this education summit that's coming up May 6th and 7th in Richmond. It's sponsored by the Middle Resolution, which is a wonderful Virginia-based organization that has a real passion for ensuring that all kids have access to quality education and school choice. And you can learn more about this upcoming conference at middleresolutionpolicy.org. I encourage everyone who's listening to go to that website, check it out. You'll get all the information you need, and you can sign up there. Again, that is middleresolutionpolicy.org. Now, our guest today will be a speaker at this education summit, and I am really excited to be meeting her for the first time and to have her on the program today. Her name is Catherine Gorka, and she is the Director for Civil Society and the American Dialogue at the Heritage Foundation's Edwin J. Fulner Institute. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rita. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Now, I want to give our listeners just a little bit more of your background and bio, because I was very impressed, frankly, when I read it. So this is from the Heritage Foundation website. It says, from 1996 to 2008, Katie lived in Budapest, Hungary, where she came to understand firsthand the devastating impact of communism, and she developed a lifelong commitment to fighting for freedom and American exceptionalism. In 2016, Katie joined the Trump transition team and then served as senior advisor in the Office of Policy at the Department of Homeland Security from 2017 to 2019, and there she focused on strategies for prevention of terrorism and targeted violence. From June to August 2019, she served as the press secretary for U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Now, Katie, there's a lot in there, and I know many of our listeners will be familiar with the Heritage Foundation as a wonderful conservative think tank. I know it has done so much good work. But I know that the Edwin J. Fulner Institute is fairly new. It's been described as a research institute with a mission to reach new audiences and to inspire in Americans, especially the young, a renewed faith in American exceptionalism. Can you just expound on that mission a little bit more?
Sure. Well, this really kind of grew out of all the craziness that's been happening for the last couple of years. I mean, particularly, for example, when I think about when the 1619 Project was introduced in August of 2019, which was just a full frontal assault on America, the American founding. And, you know, let's be really clear. Nobody objects to talking about slavery or you know, all the hard lessons we've learned in the past or all the ways that we failed to live up to the ideals set by our founders. But to go and tell untruths, which is what the 1619 Project does, it doesn't serve anybody. It doesn't help us to have meaningful conversations if you're starting it out with simple untruths. And so that was a part of our mission, was to combat some of the, you know, really bad stuff and untruthful stuff about the American story, and to help have honest conversations. So that's been a lot of what we've been doing. I think it's super important that we also continue to look back to the founding principles, because frankly, I don't think there's anything better out there as as an ideal to reach for, right? Mm. There is nothing better than saying all men are created equal. And the lies that are coming out of the diversity, inclusion, and equity propaganda, that the way you fix the problems in our country is to tell some people they're oppressors just because they're white, and others that they're victims just because they're black. Mm-hmm. That's not the way this country works, and that's not the way this country's going to heal and grow. And that's a big part of what we've been working on.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell that you are passionate about this, and that excites me. I love hearing your passion for this. And I have some questions I want to ask you about this. But before I dive into critical race theory and, you know, your whole mission, I just, after reading your background, I'm curious, can you connect the dots? What led you from what you've been doing in the past and your role with border security and all that? How did that lead you to doing what you are doing today? Is this just something that's always been a passion for you and now you're just pursuing it more?
Well, I think the important thing is I was brought up the way a lot of kids are brought up these days, which is not really brought up with any great love for the country.
Yeah.
Didn't get a good education in what the founding was about or what America really needs. So when the Berlin Wall fell, it was really just an impulse to travel to Eastern Europe because I thought, well, that's pretty momentous, right? The end of communism. I need to go there and see what that's all about. And I think I was led by God to go, because it ended up being a real transformation for me. Not only did I find my faith there, but I really came to understand what is so precious about the United States. And I'll be honest, it took me a while. It wasn't an overnight education. But, you know, I lived there for 12 years. I lived there with people whose lives had been just devastated by communism. And, you know, it's still going to take decades, I think, before they recover, because communism is just so destructive. And then, of course, I was still there. Well, I met my husband there, Sebastian, and we raised our children there. It was a beautiful place to raise our children. But then 9/11 happened, and we both got sort of pulled into dealing with the issues around terrorism. Long story short, that's how I ended up with the Trump administration. But honestly, after a couple of years of working at the Department of Homeland Security, I really started to feel that the more serious threat to the United States was not coming from abroad. It was not coming from Islamist terrorism. It was coming from inside. It was coming from what I call the next generation Marxists who are here, who are doing everything they can to destroy this country and destroy what is beautiful and precious about this land of ours. And also, let's be honest, trying to make it impossible for people to live with religious freedom, for example, to live as Christians. I cannot believe the way Christians are being discriminated against these days. So that's why I joined the fight at Heritage.
Great. So your title, again, is Director for Civil Society and the American Dialogue at the Heritage Foundation's Edwin J. Fulner Institute. Am I pronouncing that right? Is it Fulner Institute?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. And that came about around 2019, I think is correct. Is it fair to say that that institute rose up as sort of a planned response to critical race theory?
Well, it was kind of, I wouldn't say at that point that it necessarily was, because the 1619 Project was much more on people's radar screens. I think what people were aware of was the attack on America in general. Mm-hmm. And I would say, even though, yes, I think there was at a high level an awareness of critical race theory, but that has really emerged more, I think, into the American conscience over the last really 2 years, and particularly following the incidents around the killing of George Floyd, and then, you know, the absolute destruction of our cities and the tearing down of our statues and, you know, cancel culture and all of that.
Yeah. Well, I want you to talk to us a little bit more about critical race theory itself, because a lot of people define it in different ways. Some people act like, oh, you know, this is just this big exaggeration. It's not really a problem. It's not really a theory that's being taught to kids. It's just, you know, people are being unduly suspicious and worried about this. What do parents and families need to know about critical race theory, including how you would define it, and then whether or not this is actually something we need to be concerned about?
Right. Well, I mean, let me start by saying I think parents are concerned about all kinds of ridiculous things that are going on in the schools, yeah, including the sex education, mm-hmm, the transgender ideology. It, all these different threads is what I'm seeing parents rise up in response to, right? And that's important. And the fact that schools are pouring money into these, you know, expensive diversity and education, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs when they can't even teach math and reading anymore. And there are just all the many ways that our schools are failing our children. But if we want to talk specifically about critical race theory, it absolutely is a thing. It has taken over our universities. The whole drive around pronouns is an outcome of critical race theory.
Huh.
Because critical race theory says there is no known reality. Reality is only how you would experience it. So therefore, that means there's no such thing as an actual male and a female. It's all how you perceive yourself and what do you feel yourself to be, right? And that's what's interesting is that now sort of the newest craziness to come out of it is this transgender ideology, which is causing so much havoc and destruction on our kids. And that is a direct outgrowth of critical race theory. Mm-hmm. Now, to be accurate, the theory itself under the name critical race theory, of course, that's not being taught in K through 12. Mm-hmm. It's being taught in the colleges. But the suppositions of critical race theory are 100% infecting the way we are teaching in many of our schools. And also, again, you know, some schools have managed to keep it out. I would say many schools, but many schools are adopting it, and no small part because it's being pushed by the teachers' unions. Mm-hmm. And parents need to be really concerned about it. So let's just take one example. Okay, one of the really common examples is kids brought into school and being asked to separate according to, for example, what's called the shame walk, their level of, quote, privilege, right? If you're white, if you're male, if you come from a two-parent household, you are privileged.
Wow.
And therefore, you're, I don't know what, you're like, you're not as valuable as a human being. That's the implication.
Yeah.
That's what's so sort of terrible about this thing. We are undoing the incredible thinking behind the American founding. We take it so for granted. People have really forgotten how extraordinary it was that our founders rejected the social hierarchy, the aristocracy of Europe, and said, no, we are going to create a land where all people are created equal. Mm-hmm. Critical race theory is a frontal assault on that, and it's saying people who are disadvantaged or who don't have privilege, we are going to value them more, and we're going to devalue the ones with privilege. It's really distressing. And I think what makes it so, so difficult for parents is that they're afraid to speak out because the left tries to make them think that they're racist if they speak out against,
yeah,
it. And that's just not true. It is not true. And I think the answer here is for people to return to the ideas of the founding, to restore their confidence in the rightness of those ideas, and to defend those ideas, to defend the notion that we are all created equal, and we are, because we are created in the image of God.
Yeah, Absolutely. Right on. Well, if you're just joining us today, we are talking to Katie Gorka. She's the Director for Civil Society and the American Dialogue at the Heritage Foundation's Edwin J. Fulner Institute. She will be one of an impressive list of speakers at an upcoming education summit in Richmond on May 6th and 7th. If you'd like more information on how you can be part of that event, go to middleresolutionpolicy.org. That's middleresolutionpolicy.org. Katie, I have just been appalled at how asleep it seems like parents have been for so long in terms of their kids' education. And it seems like I'm a parent as well. And it seems like for a long time, the majority of parents kind of send their kids off in the morning to school and just expect that things are going to be taken care of and that the professionals educating their kids know what they're doing and they're going to do the right things. I'm in Virginia, and I saw a lot of parents wake up recently when Terry McAuliffe made his comment about how parents have no business being involved in the curriculum that their kids are being taught in the public schools. And that just sparked a huge outrage that was easy for me to see here in Virginia. Did you see that kind of outrage as well? How did that affect what you were doing? And do you think that had sort of a nationwide ripple effect on how much parents were paying attention?
Well, certainly Virginia had a ripple effect. I mean, everywhere I go, because I'm constantly traveling around the country, working with different parent groups, and everywhere I go, people look at Virginia for what we were able to do here and what the parents accomplished here. And it's what the parents in Loudoun County were doing, the incredible fight that they put up in bringing this stuff to people's attention, and then, of course, what happened in our governor's race. But honestly, it's been happening across the nation on a wide range of issues. And this is the really key point. It is, for a lot of people, it's the critical race theory. And that's coming from both Black families and white families. Some of the most passionate critics of critical race theory who I have heard are Black parents who are incensed that their children are being told that they are victims. And
yes,
therefore, they cannot accomplish what they want to accomplish. They hate
yes.
that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's not just a white issue, you know. But parents are upset about so many different things. You know this, right? Many, many parents were upset about the school closings and the way mm-hmm. that the teachers' unions have kind of looked after their own rather than taking care of the kids and putting kids first. I would say right now there's also a really passionate and growing group of parents who are very upset about what's happening on this transgender ideology. I mean, I don't know if you're hearing much about this, but so many stories are coming out now about the number of schools that have policies which allow the school to start children on a gender transition plan
Ugh.
While keeping parents in the dark.
Yeah.
And because of the fact that we're starting to hear the fallout from that, that's waking parents up. And I tell you, the other one is these, yeah, I'm sure you've heard about this too, you know, some of these just ridiculous and inappropriate books that are nothing short of pornography in our schools and in our school libraries. And it still baffles my mind how the Fairfax County School, which had a whole fight over these books, the librarian just insisted on keeping these books in. It's like, why? If they know it's so upsetting to the parents and it is so clearly pornography that you can't even show it on the news, right? The news will block out the images
yeah.
because it's so inappropriate.
Yeah.
You can't show it on the news. You want to tell me it's okay to show it to children? That's just crazy.
Yeah. It almost seems like there has been, in the public school system at least, a sort of shift from a focus on academics, having high academic standards, teaching our kids what they need to know, to this sort of social engineering and shaping kids to be the kind of people that the government thinks they should be and having them believe the things that the government thinks they should believe. First of all, do you see that? Would you agree that there's been a shift? And then if so, is it something, do you think, that's just happened kind of on its own, just naturally, or do you think there has been some purpose behind this kind of shift?
Well, it's definitely happening. You're 100% right. It's happening. So there have been a couple of different really key influences, and these are things that like Jane Lindsay talks about. He does such a good job. My colleagues at Heritage, Jonathan Butcher, he's got a great new book out called Splintered, which I really commend to people. It's called Splintered, Critical Race Theory and the Progressive War on Truth. But, you know, one of the influences, for example, is a South American writer, Paulo Freire, and a book called Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which is very much of a critical race theory sort of social justice mindset. And basically the thinking of this is education is not to elevate and to raise up our children. It's an opportunity for activism, right? And that's exactly what you sort of just identified. And this book has been hugely influential in our schools of education. So the places where teachers go to get their training to teach in our schools are being taught from books like Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which is teaching them that education is an opportunity for activism. And that's where we're getting into so much trouble.
Yeah. It seems like what is particularly harmful is it's like a perfect storm. It seems like as the public education system is shifting away from focusing on academic and toward this focus on creating the social climate that they want in our young people, at the same time, it seems like, as I mentioned before, parents are sort of falling asleep at the wheel for the most part and just turning the complete education of their children, not only academically, but, you know, socially, morally, ethically, turning that over to the school. And it seems like a lot of parents almost see the school system as responsible for raising their kids. And I think that is not only bad for kids, but also bad for families, the whole family structure. Do you see that? And do you agree that it's bad? And what can we do about it?
Yeah, 100%. But I would say I think it's a perfect storm in our favor as well, because I would totally agree with you that we really just handed our children over to the public school system for the last, 50, 70 years. And I think now finally we realized the cost of that. And, you know, part of what's happened is you've created just a tremendous power imbalance between parents on the one hand and this huge government school system, this government bureaucracy around education, which basically makes parents powerless.
Yes.
And then you couple that with the teachers' unions, we are in trouble. But the good news is, I mean, here's where I think it's a perfect storm in our favor. And that is the fact that COVID came in just at a time when this stuff was really reaching a kind of radical peak means they couldn't keep it in the dark. And I am just amazed when I look across the country. You cannot believe the levels of activism and engagement, and it's all parents. It's not just parents in the white suburbs. It's Hispanic parents. It's African-American parents. It's parents everywhere are forming new coalitions and coming together and fighting, and it's having all kinds of ripple effect because there is no single answer, right? It's going to be a very complex, multi-step answer, which includes things like every state needs a parent bill of rights. Every state needs laws which allow parents to see exactly what their kids are learning. But we also need more parents to step up and homeschool. And we are seeing that. I mean, the shift in numbers of homeschooling families has been tremendous. And we need more charter schools. I cannot believe that Virginia, we still can't have charter schools, you know?
Yeah.
But that's why I'd say I'm so excited for this conference next week. weekend that the Middle Resolution is doing, the 2022 Virginia Education Summit, because it's going to take parents of all stripes and with all diverse interests coming together simply to fight for greater parental rights. And people should be coming, whether they're concerned about the school closures and the mask mandates, or whether it's transparency, whether it's sex ed, whether it's CRT. It doesn't matter what the specific issue is. What matters is we've got to do a better job of putting the power for education back into parents' hands. And that's what this conference is going to be really focused on.
Yeah. So again, if you're interested in learning more about this conference, it is going to be a great event. I highly encourage you to go to middleresolutionpolicy.org. Find out more and get registered to go. Katie, I agree with you. It's so encouraging to see parents getting involved. We are supposed to be a self-governing people. We should all be involved in our government at all levels. And the system gets messed up when we stop being involved, because our system was meant to operate through a self-governing people who are involved and aware and doing the things they need to do to keep the system running properly. How would you describe the proper role of the public school, Katie?
Oh, well, I mean, I think it should just really stick to education. And now, in fact, there's a whole discussion. I heard Dennis Prager was talking about this recently. I don't think schools should even be teaching sex education. I mean, let's keep things like values and these important conversations in the family. Let schools go back to sticking to just straightforward education. But again, I honestly think that we need to really seriously rethink public schools. And I know we want to keep them. We don't want to get rid of them. But they've got way too much power. And they've really, I think, in too many instances, tried to keep parents at arm's length. And that's just not going to work. And the only way it's going to change is, as you say, every person has to step up. And I'll tell you what that really means right now is, I think everybody needs to step up and play a role in governing our communities, even at the lowest level. I'm running for this very modest position here just to serve on our local community center board, right? Because it reaches children. I think it's important that they not do crazy things. But everybody can step up, whether it's to run for school board, you know, your county commission, your state representative. It's so important that we really engage and sort of live up to what it means to be a self-governing republic.
Absolutely. Well, believe it or not, Katie, we are about out of time. I want to encourage our listeners one more time to go to middleresolutionpolicy.org and get more information about this education summit that is sponsored by the Middle Resolution. It's coming up in Richmond, May 6th and May 7th. And our guest today, Katie Gorka, will be one of the speakers at the summit, along with an impressive list of other speakers. Katie, thank you so much for being with us today. I have learned a lot, and I'm excited about what you are doing there at the Heritage Foundation.
Thanks so much, Rita, for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, as I close today, I want to thank again our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney, Blessings Christian Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel Services, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren in Harrisonburg. Thank you all for listening today and for your encouragement and your continued financial support. If you'd like to make a donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg 22803. Finally, if you'd like to listen to the program again or share it with your friends, go to valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads there on the homepage. I'm Rita Peters, here with engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.